See, I told you I'm not into it.
The Midnight Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness, we're coming over. Madam Vice Chair.
I love opening this committee with something written by women who are in the military, and I like reading When Janie Comes Marching Home. But nothing moved me today, so I'm just going to state that the current wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have involved the deployment of many more women than any previous war. And there were 75,000 women in the Vietnam era war, and they, most of them, were nurses. And then there were others that participated in the invasions of Panama and Honduras, and they were among the 41,000 women deployed during the Gulf War. And this is just one statement that a woman serving in Panama and Honduras stated, and how times have changed from when she was serving then than what women are doing today. She said, "Oh God, when I joined boot camp, women were just being allowed to use rifles. We were still just running a mile and a half, and the guys were running 3 miles. I would talk to women who joined the Marine Corps this year prior, and they were still doing this little etiquette thing with their gloves out in town. There were a number of times early on when commanders were like, 'I'm not taking you, you're a woman, and I have nothing but male Marines. I don't even have facilities for you, that's why you're not going with us.' I remember going to Honduras, 2,200 Marines, and I was the only female. Everyone wanted to tiptoe around me. 'You don't need to tiptoe around me,' I'd say. 'I can use a bush just like you can use a bush. And if you're going to shower, if you're not going to shower, then I don't need to shower either.'" Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Colleagues, we're going to work down the three work sessions that we have. Senator Courtney will be joining us later, and we'll go back so he can vote on those. And then we're going to move down the work public hearing list. Representative Olson, Representative Witt, and Representative Esquivel are all going to be here later. And when they do come in, we'll take a break and move around and reopen those public hearings. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2036. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2036 was previously heard on April the 28th. Designates the balance of Oregon highways in to honor veterans, including the World War I Veterans Memorial, Korean War Veterans Memorial, Purple Heart Trail, as part of renaming the balance. This came off of House Committee and off the House floor with unanimous votes. There's no revenue, a minimal fiscal, no subsequent referral.
And Council, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the final version that puts all the last pieces into place. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Bocas, I move House Bill 2036 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves House Bill 2036 to the floor with a due pass. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Then so ordered. We'll close the work session. Senator Courtney is excused, and I'm going to suspend the work session. Or you want to close it?
I just want to make a note on the record that
okay.
You're excused.
And we'll come back to that. We'll close the work session on 2036. With that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2210A, if you would, Council. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2210A authorizes media access to restricted areas under emergency declaration, prohibits emergency personnel from commandeering broadcaster property, requires the Office of Emergency Management to authorize a private broadcasters association to plan to create a program to issue credentials for authorized persons, requires such a plan to include specified training, requires private broadcasters association to submit an annual report to the Office of Emergency Management. It has a -A5 amendment that was discussed previously on April 28th, permitting access only to maintain critical equipment. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact and no subsequent report.
And my notes say that Ms. Miller wants to correct the record.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. We did submit, for the record, I'm Ellen Miller with CFM, representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. We did want to provide a correction for the record. We submitted on OLIS a letter that you will see as a response to Senate President Courtney's question last week during the public hearing about future technology that newspaper publishers might utilize and whether they would be eligible under this program. The simple answer is no, they would not be eligible. And we have been notified by the lobbyists for the newspaper publishers that at this time they're not interested in amending this legislation, and if that is an issue they want to take up in the future, they will look in the future legislative sessions to do so. So we just wanted to provide that correction. So we're just looking at the Dash 5A amendment. So we ask for you to consider those amendments, and we hope for the passage of this bill through committee today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Questions?
And the A5's basically
in your own clarifying.
Deleting providing a public service. Okay. Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the A5 amendments dated 4-1-2015.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the A5 amendments dated 4-1-2015. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there opposition? So ordered.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 2210A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves House Bill 2210A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? So ordered. I'll carry that bill.
Okay.
And Senator Courtney is excused for the moment, for the record. I'm going to carry this bill.
Okay. But I'm at the first one.
Who carries the first one?
Mr. Chair, the members of the committee wanted to point it out. We forgot to name a carrier on the previous bill, but you can revisit that.
When Senator Courtney volunteers.
When Senator Courtney volunteers.
Because he's late. Okay. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2210 and open a work session on 2230. Council,
Mr. Chair,
please.
Members of the committee, House Bill 2230, previously heard on April 28th, requires the Oregon Health Authority to notify the Department of Veterans Affairs of the agreeable veteran's name and address to declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2015. Becomes operative January 1st, 2016. The committee will recall that Representative Nathanson was here to testify. This is the extension of the no wrong door policy to the health authority. It has no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has issued, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 2230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Madam Vice Chair, Monis Anderson moves House Bill 2230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? So ordered. Please note that Senator Courtney is excused. We'll be coming back to him. With that, we're going to close the work session for the moment on 2230. And with that, colleagues, we're going to start down the public hearing list, and we're going to open HCR1. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR1 recognizes Lance Corporal Joseph E. Rodewald. My apologies if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. 1988 to 2010.
Do you want to do all of them, Representative?
I think, Mr. Chair, it would be wise to do three. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on HCR 2 and HCR 3 same time.
So, Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Andy Olson, and I'm state representative out of the Albany area. There is a connection between all three of them. You have all three of them graduating from Mid Valley High Schools. Lance Corporal Joseph Rodewald graduated from South Albany High School. And then you have Sergeant Ian Taney, who graduated from Dallas High School. And then Corporal Corey Weens with the United States Army, and his dog Cooper, well, Cooper didn't graduate, but graduated from West Albany High School. So you have kind of a connection here with these guys, these military individuals from the Mid-Valley. But just quickly here with Lance Corporal Joseph Rodewald. Joe was born October 1988 in Eugene, Oregon, to Jackie Brotherton and John Rodewald. That might explain also why he was a major Duck fan. Something I forgot to share with on the House floor, that Chip Kelly was there at his funeral when he was killed over in Iraq. So there was a major connection there. He graduated from South Albany High School, as I had mentioned, in 2007, and there was great comments from the folks that were there at the school. Brent Beville, who was his wrestling coach and football coach at the time, he is now the principal there, remembers Joe playing both football and wrestling. He wrestled at 171, 189 pounds. He was extremely good. He chose not to pursue a football career, which he could have done quite easily in college, because he wanted to enlist in the Marine Corps and did not want to get himself injured. So he chose to go that path. And upon graduation from high school, he entered into the Marine Corps, and on 13th October 2010, just 6 days before his 22nd birthday, he was killed near Sangin in the Helmand province by a roadside bomb while riding in the lead vehicle of a convoy. Lance Corporal Rodewald had been in Afghanistan for only about 3 weeks at that point and was serving his first tour with the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines Weapon Company. Corporal Corey Weens was born on September 6, 1986, in Albany to Kevin and Judith Weens. And Corey graduated from West Albany High School in 2005. He joined the United States Army right after graduation. He eventually would become a dog handler. Corporal Weens worked alongside Cooper, a yellow Labrador retriever who specialized in explosive detection. When they first met, Cooper didn't know simple obedience commands, and over time, he and Corey became quite the item over there. Corey was very proud of Cooper and the work they could accomplish. It's unknown how many lives they probably saved in detecting bombs and explosive devices. On the 6th of July, 2007, at the age of 20, Corporal Weens and Cooper both made the ultimate sacrifice following an improvised explosive device attack. The first military working dog team killed in action during action together since the beginning of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were laid to rest together on 18th of July 2007 at the Salt Creek Cemetery near Dallas, Oregon. And there's quite a bit I can share in detail about, but I'm just kind of giving you a little snapshot here of all three of these gentlemen. And then Sergeant Ian Taney. Ian was born on December 3rd, 1984, in Salem to John and Theta Taney. And when Ian was 15 years old, he participated in a year-long exchange program in Argentina in which he returned home spouting fluent Spanish. Ian's mom, Theta, once said, "As a very young child, he had a very strong sense of self and was very decisive about what he wanted to do with his life." So he graduated from Dallas High School in 2003. He joined the United States Marine Corps in 2005 and married Ashley Stevenson a few months after enlisting. On 16th of October 2010, Sergeant Taney was killed in the line of duty in the Sangin Helmand province of Afghanistan as a result of an improvised explosive device. Ashley Taney, his wife, said he loved to laugh. The two met in preschool and stayed friends throughout high school. Finally, when both of them were working at a retirement facility, they began dating, and Taney was excited about the arrival of their daughter. Ian's dad shared, "It's hard when you've lost somebody and you try to define who they were. He was honored to be a member of the Marine Corps." So, Mr. Chair and committee members, you know, urge you to move this forward, all three of these.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Representative. We do have Brittany Paulson and Jeremy Thorpe signed up to testify on HCR1. If you would be kind enough to come up. And if you just state your name and then...
Hello, Mr. Chair and Committee. My name is Brittany Paulson, and I am from Albany. I met Joe when he was actually home on recruiter's duty after he completed boot camp before they started their schooling. Lance Corporal Joseph Rodewald. And I got to know him very well because we both worked in the same area where the recruiter's office was. My office was a few doors down, so we talked in passing quite often. Joe and I actually ended up becoming pretty good friends, and I talked to him right before he ended up deploying. So he was looking forward to coming back and, you know, being able to move on with his life. I also lost my brother in Iraq in 2005, and Joe and I were able to connect because some of Joe's friends had gone and deployed prior to him joining the Marine Corps. Every day I get to drive past my brother's highway memorial sign, and it brings me pride. It makes me smile. And sometimes those days when you just drive by that sign, it just reminds you, here I am. And so for all of Joe's friends and his family members that are all over the place, when they would be able to drive by wherever his sign is placed, they would get that reminder that I'm still here and I'm still with you.
Thank you. Young man.
My name is Jeremy Thorpe, and I'm also from Tangent, Oregon. I didn't really get to know Joe personally because I was very young. Maybe I did get to meet him eventually, but the main reason that we are all here to testify for this is to create memories for Joe and for all the other signs that are here as well. I mean, I pretty much can say for everyone in all the families of the signs that are being withheld are here to show that they want this sign to be put up to where they can remember them after they pass. My brother Tyler was killed in 2005, and as my sister said, some of us drive by that sign every single day on the way to work, or some people on the way to school, and just seeing that sign from how many times I pass it, it's good to know that part of my brother is always going to be sitting in the same spot, and he doesn't really move, and it's great to just drive by it, and I think that putting another sign up for someone else's family would be another great way to honor him and remember him as being part of their life.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members?
Thank you so much.
And thank you for coming and testifying. And so you know, we schedule work sessions the following week, and so this bill, the HCR1, will be scheduled for a work session next week. I have one other individual signed up to testify on HCR3, and that's Mr. Cluding.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, for the committee. For the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters, Oregon Air National Guard, 1960-64. I knew the Ian family personally for many years. Nobody knows the grief that these families go through until you are one. I was attended two of these three funerals. I always stood outside with a full-size American flag along with the Freedom Riders. That's where I stood. But back to the Taney family, it was hard for them. But just 3 months after Ian was killed, his daughter was born, the daughter he never got to see. She is now almost six, long blonde hair. That she keeps his family going. And I thought you might like to know that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Cluding? Thank you very much. And colleagues, there's no one else signed up to testify on these three House concurrent resolutions. We will schedule all three for work sessions next week. So I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 1, 2, and 3. Madam Vice Chair, I would accept a motion to suspend the rules and return to work sessions on 2036, 2210, and 2230 for the purpose of allowing Senator Courtney to vote.
Chair, I move to suspend the rules so that President Courtney can vote on House Bill 2036, 2210A, and 2230.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to suspend the rules to allow Senator Courtney to vote on 2036, 2210, 2230. Seeing no opposition, so ordered. We are in work session on 2036, 2210, and 2230. How do you vote on the three bills, Senator Courtney?
I vote aye, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Please have the record reflect that Senator Courtney votes aye on 2036, which he will be carrying, 2210, and 2230. Thank you. We'll close the work session on those three bills, and we're going to move down and open a public hearing on House Bill. Actually, I'll skip one because I see Representative Olson is still here. You're on 2258, right?
2658.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2658. If you would, please. Representative? Yes, I'll tell you afterwards. That's what happens when we make.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2658A permits siblings of service members killed in action to obtain the Gold Star Family License Plate. Declares an emergency effective October 1st, 2015. This came out of House Committee and off the House floor with unanimous.
It's up to you, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, my name is Andy Olson, and I'm state representative from the Albany area. House Bill 2658 is the Gold Star bill. It's fairly simple. In 2007, Senate Bill 557 was passed by the Oregon Legislature, and that was a bill that was introduced at that time by former Senator Frank Morris. But this bill allowed for the issuing of Gold Star family registration plates to family members of a person killed during active service in the military. This bill, House Bill 2658, would expand the current law, which includes parents and spouses, to siblings.
Please state your name and you're next.
My name is Michael Samard. I'm the brother of Tyler Troyer. As you can tell, you know, our whole family's here. I've kind of been thinking about this a lot because, we kind of missed our chance last year. And so over that course of the year, I've just kind of been thinking about, you know, kind of the biggest reasons why I really want this. For us, being the siblings, we, in a sense, we were kind of neglected. You know, we don't get a lot of recognition for the losses that we suffered. You know, it's more directed towards the parents, the spouses, the kids. And so really this bill is kind of our one opportunity to kind of show our pride that we have for the loss that was sacrificed. It's a small token, but it means a lot to us. And so it would really mean a lot for this bill.
Thank you. Ms. Paulson, you want to speak again?
Yes, please. My name is Brittany, and I'm from Albany. I actually wrote something for this one.
Brittany Paulson, for the
Brittany
record.
Brittany Paulson, yes. I am the younger sister to United States Marine Lance Corporal Tyler Troyer, who was killed in action on November 19th, 2005. The loss of my brother has been the most significant tragedy I've ever experienced. My brother was my best friend, and the impact he had on my life was indescribable. I would love to be able to put a Gold Star license plate on my car as a representation of the sacrifice that not only my brother and all the other Marines, soldiers, airmen, and sailors made, but also the sacrifice that us family members have made. It represents the pride that I carry in regards to how my brother gave his life. I am so proud that my brother was so selfless and was able to make the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. Most people refer to celebrities, athletes, or political figures as their heroes, but not me. I'm lucky enough to say that my hero is not only my brother, he was also my best friend and a Marine. Thank you.
Mr. Thorpe.
My name is Jeremy Thorpe, and I am from Tangent, Oregon. I'm 15 years old, and I'm at the point of my life to where I can start driving. And I was only 6 years old when my brother passed away. So I kind of want to get this bill passed to where I can put a Gold Star license plate on the back of my car to where I can take him to wherever I want to go. Because it's at that point where I was so young, I'm starting to forget a lot of the things that you grow up around being around your brother, your big brother. But you're just getting to that point where you're starting to lose everything because, I mean, I was only six, and a lot of those memories are fading away now. But I think for all of us, I would agree that we all felt the point where it's like we felt neglected in our lives for not being recognized as the Gold Star siblings because we've all paid the sacrifice. Everyone and every single family has paid for it. But apparently, like they both said, it's the parents and the spouses and the kids that get the most recognition. And I think it would help all of us keep a part of Tyler in our lives to from a day-to-day basis.
Thank you. Any questions? And Michael, what was your last name again?
Samard.
Samard. She has to write these things down, right? As I stated earlier, what we do is we carry the bills through the week so that someone else has input and wants to put into the record, and then they're scheduled for a work session in the following week. And again, I appreciate both all three of you testifying. Thank you, Representative Olson, for bringing these forward, and our hearts go out to the family. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to close the public hearing on 2658, and we're going to open a public hearing back up one step. I don't see either representatives around here. We're going to open a public hearing on 2645B.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2645B requires public universities to give eligible veterans and service members enrollment priority over other students from its community colleges to establish priority enrollment systems, provides minimum requirements for a priority enrollment system, applies to new and continuing students on or after September 15, 2016. This came out of two House committees, the Veterans Committee and the Education Committee House side, unanimously, and off the House floor unanimously. There is no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal, and there is a subsequent referral to a policy committee, Mr. Chair, the Education Committee.
We have four people signed up. Stephen Gordon, Kimberly, help me here, counsel. We're going to cancel all that. Representative Witt, you're just in time to walk up to the podium right here, and you can bring anybody in the room you would like with you. We are on House Bill 2645B.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt from Oregon, House District 31, appearing this afternoon in support of House Bill 2645B. This is a very simple bill that provides for priority enrollment in our state's higher ed for active military personnel as well as military veterans. And this priority enrollment would make it possible for, as I say, either active military or veterans who've presumably put their lives on hold while they've gone off to serve our country. And when they have returned back to a civilian life, more than likely have decided that they may like to take advantage of some of their veterans' benefits and obtain a higher education. Along with entering back into civilian life and resuming their normal lives, trying to pick that up, trying to go to school, often makes things very complicated. There may be a family involved, more than likely a job on the outside. And so this priority enrollment would make it possible, perhaps, for the individual to get a so-called pick-of-the-litter course early, a choice time slot, so that that individual then could perhaps work the full-time job on the side as well, or meet other family obligations, child care, whatever the case may be. It also might mean that there was an opportunity for early enrollment in a high-demand course, that course possibly necessary for graduation. And limited opportunities, perhaps, if you don't get in the first year, whether or not you are able to get in time for graduation may be questionable. This would allow more certainty in that regard. And it might mean that someone was able to get into a small seminar. Oftentimes those may be very difficult for folks to get in. So in recognition of those who have served our country, this bill's an attempt to help make life a little easier for them when they're trying to obtain some higher education. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions that you or the committee might have.
Questions? It's a quiet committee today for some reason. Calm before the storm. It's probably the last bill coming. Thank you, Representative. Thank you for bringing this forward. And I'm assuming when Oregon State University and the other universities come up, they're going to be fine with this, right?
As far as I know, Mr. Chairman.
It's a strange building these days, Representative. I'm just checking. Okay. Thank you very much. I'll let you go back to your business in the other chamber. And I will call up
the opportunity.
You're most welcome. Rebecca Mathern from Oregon State University, Kimberly, and Steve Gordon. We have three chairs. Don't be bashful. Ladies first.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Mathern. I'm from Oregon State University. And I'm here representing all four-year public institutions in the state of Oregon. I'm the university registrar at Oregon State. And first, I would like to thank Representative Witt. He allowed us to work with him on the language to ensure that we could get our veterans and active duty military officers appropriate advising before they got registration. So that was extremely helpful. We support the legislation, and it really allows us to have our on-campus veteran certifying officials work with our veterans and our active duty military to get them registered early. That's it.
Thank you. Yes, young lady, your turn. Rebecca.
Thank you, Chairperson Boquist and the committee for hosting us today. My name's Kimberly Douthit. I'm a citizen, a veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard, a former student veteran at City College of San Francisco, a Navy wife. My husband still serves in the Navy Reserve, and I'm also the child of a Vietnam-era veteran. My father served in Vietnam in the Navy. He passed away in the 80s when I was a child. At that time, he was 100% considered 100% disabled by the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today testifying on my own behalf as a private citizen for military families. To this point, the bill has not included military family members in any capacity. And while I appreciate the fact that the House has chosen to pass the bill and honor veterans for their service, I think part of the reason that we were looking for priority registration was because for veterans using any type of VA benefit, there are certain time constraints and constraints on the classes that they're allowed to take. So I think that allowing priority registration for them is going to be tremendously helpful. And for that reason, I support the bill. This might be naive, and maybe it's too late in the process, but I'm hoping that the committee may consider looking at possibly adding family members using certain VA benefits to the bill. Perhaps not all family members, because that might get a little bit difficult to track, but family members using VA educational benefits face the same time constraints and restrictions on classes they're allowed to take as veterans using VA benefits. And I know the bill is written to include all veterans, but I'm hoping that someone will look at considering adding family members as Washington State is looking at right now. You'll have to forgive me, I was reading about this, that they may only be looking at adding spouses, but we see children who use certain VA benefits. I was talking to my mother. She said that when my brother and I were in college, because our father was on 100% VA disability at the time of his death, we were eligible for Chapter 35 benefit, which is dependents' educational assistance, and that does place restrictions on the classes you can take. If you're looking at it as a benefit to honor service and sacrifice. I can probably speak on behalf of other family members who would rather have their family member whole and living versus having access to the benefit. So I would say that they, too, have made a sacrifice. So if you look at it from the practical side, where it allows them to take the classes they need to graduate in time and to effectively use their benefits, or if you're looking at it as a way to honor the sacrifice of your military and their families, it's something that may take consideration. And now I'm thinking I probably should have written something that would give more information about the benefits and family access to it for those who aren't familiar. But I just, I'm hoping that at some point it will be looked into or considered as an additive to this bill or a future bill might be put into consideration. So thank you. I'm sorry if I was a little bit verbose, but I appreciate your attention.
Thank you. You're next, and then we'll come back for questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Gordon. I'm a VA Department of Veterans Affairs vocational rehabilitation counselor for about 16 years now. And I'm currently assigned to PCC, Portland Community College. As my title is, I'm the Vet Success on Campus Counselor, helping veterans to hopefully maximize their benefits and be successful in their education and careers. Many veterans depend on the GI Bill housing stipend to subsidize living expenses so they can focus on their educational pursuits. As the housing stipend is based on enrollment status, if a student veteran is unable to enroll in only one needed class, his status could change to three-quarter time, which would reduce the housing stipend by 25%. This can create an undue financial burden, especially for the veteran with a family. Without priority registration, they may be forced to pay out of pocket for tuition, fees, textbooks, and supplies in order to complete their training programs. Veterans who are already working and supporting families face additional challenges that negatively impact their chances for success. Added financial burden and debt may cause some veterans to abandon their education due to other competing responsibilities. Priority enrollment and registration is a needed resource. With priority enrollment, student veterans will be assured of being able to enroll in required courses on time, stay on task for graduation, and maximize their VA education benefits. Because veterans that are receiving VA education benefits can only take required courses, they cannot take any courses that they might want. And there are currently 9 states that have priority registration laws enacted: Washington, California, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Tennessee already have priority registration for veterans and service members. And as Kim was talking about, there is a VA education benefit. It's called Chapter 35, Dependents and Educational Assistance for Dependents and Spouses of 100% Service-Connected Veterans. They're able to attend college on VA education benefit. In most states, in all the states that I know of, they are included in the priority registration benefit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You said you were in the Coast Guard, ma'am?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, leave it to a Coastie to open a can of worms here. So let's see where
I'm
we go.
I'm sorry.
That's actually what we see here. Since we've got ODVA and we have, I guess you got the vote of all 5 boards. I mean, Ms. Mather. So can either one of you speculate on how many Chapter 35 benefit individuals there are in the institutions? If I recall correctly, this is a pretty small number compared to VA veterans.
Yes.
I believe that, well, there's less than 100 for sure. And there's currently 1,200 veterans, approximately, give or take, you know, because of terms that it up and down. But right now it's about 1,200 veterans.
That includes benefited family members,
including,
in our tracking.
Including benefited family members at Portland Community College.
Okay.
And I don't have the numbers for the other four-year publics, but Oregon State University is the largest four-year institution that serves veterans. And we, just as of yesterday, counted, and we are serving 1,216 folks using veteran benefits. And about three-quarters of them are veterans, but there still is a relatively large number of students who are dependents or, you know, former dependents of students using those benefits.
And please follow up on your reaction to the young lady to your right.
I'm sorry?
The reaction to the young lady to your right, to her comment.
So just speaking on behalf of Oregon State University at this point, the way that we offer our benefits would really not be problematic to offer the same service to dependents who are receiving the benefits, because if they are active duty military officers or they are veterans, they're going to have the same sort of restrictions as the dependents are having. And so just in agreement with the statements that you made, there would be no harm in providing the same service if the point of the bill is to ensure that the students get the coursework that they need in order to graduate without running out of benefits. You really need, I mean, they're both struggling with the same thing. They're both struggling with trying to get to the same point without losing their benefits. So it would behoove the legislation to also include that population.
But we'll get to that because Representative Witt hasn't left yet. So, Madam Vice Chair, do you have any questions?
Well, we passed legislation a couple of years ago. I think it was my bill or yours and my bill. It was your father a Vietnam vet?
He was. I'm from Pennsylvania originally, and that's where he passed away.
Did he have a Purple Heart?
No.
Okay. Because we had passed legislation if a veteran had a Purple Heart, meaning he was disabled or killed, then families would be able to take advantage of education benefits. Isn't that correct? As I'm trying to recall the exact wording of that bill.
It was our bill.
Oh, it was yours and my bill.
Yeah.
Okay. So we made one small step for those military veterans who had earned a Purple Heart or had died, that their family members. And there, I thought that there was no restrictions.
Not with the Purple Heart, no.
Yeah.
And I can remember the discussion because the guy was in Indonesia and the wife was in the East Coast and you were having a baby shower or whatever it was.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes. Okay. I do remember.
Senator Courtney, you have questions?
Well, just so I'm correct here, I noticed that the addenda refers to public universities, but the bill also talks to community colleges. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, number two. Rebecca Matherin, who are you representing here today, if I may ask?
So, I'm from Oregon State University, and I'm the university registrar, and I only represent Oregon State University. However, my colleagues from the other four-year public institutions, we have conversations about different legislation that's impacting us, and so we are our roles, the university registrars at these institutions, are all in support of this legislation.
That's very interesting. So I like the bill, but I find this fascinating. So you're representing here today, there are seven public universities in the state of Oregon. You represent all seven public universities.
I'm representing Oregon State University as the university registrar.
So, okay, I'm not trying to mess you up or give you a hard time. I'm confused because, and I went along with it, I capitulated. We broke the system up, completely broke it up last time in our wisdom, creating independent boards for everything, and I'm still unhappy about it. Finally went along with it, capitulated. So I find it fascinating now that a single individual is speaking for the seven universities, all of whom have independent boards, are off on their own. And that's what you're telling me here today, that you represent Eastern Oregon University, Southern Oregon University, Oregon Institute of Technology, Western Oregon University, the Oregon State University, University of Oregon, and Portland State. Is that correct?
She's going to the list.
Can I extrapolate?
You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I represent Oregon State University.
Correct. I understand that. You're the registrar. I clearly understand.
Correct. So I have had conversations with my colleagues, university registrars at the other institutions, and we have all stated that we support this legislation, and I was sharing that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, it'd be interesting why the heck isn't here or something like that, if you understand my point. No, I'm being very upfront with you.
Right, and you know what I think of the heck.
So I get it. I'm not asking you to love heck, but it's interesting. Thank you, Rebecca. I wasn't trying to set you up, but my confusion, you do understand my confusion. I am confused, Registrar.
And she's only the registrar.
I get it. She's not only. Believe me, something about a registrar. You don't graduate if the registrar doesn't say you graduate. So they are the most powerful person on a campus.
It's good news that you're not filing to get a degree there because you'd be in trouble right now, Mr. President. What's that? Yeah, I see. No, Jock, we're not getting you yet. We're not going to bail out the universities yet. That's not a problem. We don't know that there's a problem yet. Anybody else have questions for this panel before Representative Witt comes back up?
I want to make it clear that the universities would be appropriate and okay with an amendment to allow other family members on this.
Well, actually, she can only speak from Oregon State.
From Oregon State. The OSU likes it.
Yeah. Oregon State University would be fine. And let me just sort of offer the caveat. This is about folks who are receiving the benefits, right? So folks who are getting the benefit, for us it makes no difference because they're still under that strict time frame.
Okay.
Okay, would you like to rejoin us, Representative Witt? Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jock, if you want to come up too, now that you can come up to start bailing water if you want to. And Representative Witt, I think you heard the discussion. It's your bill. And you heard the discussion on the Chapter 35 and the family members. And I'm looking for your reaction, your wisdom. If there was, I suppose 7 institutions that could figure out what the heck they were doing, and the community college, whether you were amenable to this sort of addendum or amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would be entirely amenable to an amendment of that sort. With that said, just a note of explanation, I purposefully went and tried to keep the bill limited, conservative in scope. Only as a demonstration that this would not be costly. I can in no way figure out how priority enrollment would be costly to any of the institutions, but I wanted to make sure that we got the program and the institutions felt comfortable with it. And so not only that we could demonstrate that it was not costly, but also so that the various institutions could familiarize themselves with it. And I think it's going to be a not very big deal, period. With that said, I am entirely open to broadening the universe that it covers. I think, without question, it would be appropriate for family members, for veterans who were killed or are significantly, seriously, totally disabled. I think all of that makes good sense, and it may make sense to broaden it even a little more than that. But again, my purpose was conservative, to get the program implemented, everybody comfortable with it, and proceed from there. But my personal desires are, it would be appropriate, Mr. Chairman.
Fellow Representative Witt, the community colleges, they didn't sign up on our side. Did they testify in your guys's committee?
They did, yes. And in fact, we're very helpful. I would say that the community colleges and OSU in particular were exceedingly helpful in helping me draft the language as well as helping guide me through the thought process of how to best design this bill and make it work for everyone. So, yes, they were very involved.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Jock, you want a dog paddle?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jock Mills. I'm the Director of Government Relations at OSU. I'll explain the process that we used in terms of considering this bill. We're a voluntary association of 7 of the institutions got together. We go through the bills together. We discuss this bill at length. We assigned one person to carry the water for this bill, and that was OSU, primarily because we have the largest veteran registration. So all 7 institutions are all in. It's a voluntary way of working through this. We didn't need a coordinating board or a governing board to agree that this was a good bill to support.
Thank you, and I believe you know who the legislative liaison is for the HEC, so I'm certain you can reach out to her and ask her questions.
I will. We would be well advised.
Madam Vice Chair, you have any other questions? Senator Olson, any other questions? Thank you very much. Bill Cluding, I think you're signed up for this one, too, if you want to.
Thank you.
Representative, we'll get back to you before we tamper with your bill.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
We do like to reach out in this chamber and let people know.
Right. Thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, committee for the record, Bill Cluding again. Luckily, I'm not an expert on this bill, but I appreciate Representative Witt bringing this bill forward. Anything we can do to help our veterans as a nation or citizens of Oregon, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Cluding? Is there anybody else that wants to testify in Pandora's box here? Thank you very much. This bill will be carried over to next week at a minimum. I would encourage, I believe it's Kimberly, if she would like to email counsel who is on OLIS with the conceptual idea for an amendment that she put forward so we could at least do the parameters. And then we will also check with the original sponsor of the bill, the community colleges, the seven. Actually, we'll check with the HEC.
Correct.
So that they can figure out what they're doing, and then we'll reach out to ODVA to see what kind of numbers and see if there's any feasibility of slightly expanding the present B and gross version, if that is permissible, with the chief sponsor of the bill. With that, colleagues, we're going to close the public hearing on 2645B and open, I believe, the last public hearing of the day, which is 2892A. If you would, would counsel, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Hospital 2892A requires the display of the National League of Families POW/MIA flag, along with the Oregon and the United States flags, on all newly constructed public buildings and on all existing public buildings capable of displaying three flags simultaneously. This measure came from the House Committee anonymously and off the House floor anonymously. There's no revenue impact.
Unanimously.
Unanimously.
Not anonymously.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. I didn't even notice that I used the wrong word. Yeah. Unanimously.
The House does a lot of anonymous things, but
no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, and no such program.
Gentlemen, if you would please state your name, and one of you can.
Chair Boquist, other committee members. I'm Hugh Crawford with the Veterans of Foreign Wars, post 1833. I'm representing over 57,000 members of veterans groups supporting House Bill 2892, requiring that the POW/MIA flag be flown at our Oregon State Capitol and other public buildings 24/7. 365 days a year. The POW/MIA flag serves as a reminder to today's men and women in uniform that if they become prisoners of war, they will not be forgotten. And also assures the families of our missing from the past that we remember and respect their loved ones. The citizens of Oregon will fly this flag to all missing or captured or returned home, the home they defended with honor. The Oregon State Capitol currently flies the POW/MIA flag 6 days a year as mandated by the 105th Congress in 1998. We feel there's a need to show a more appropriate and proper respect in Oregon for Americans who are listed as prisoners of war or missing in action. They are not just POWs and MIAs 6 days a year. They are POWs and MIAs 24/7, 365 days a year. On a personal note, I was a helicopter door gunner in the Vietnam War. I helped search for missing crews without success. I never forgot the feeling of loss and what those crews had gone through. Years later, I met a family member, a missing crew member from my company, and I know from her accounts what it felt like when our loved one was never found. I think that the least Oregon can do for their 98 missing warriors and their families is to fly this flag 24/7, 365 days a year. The importance of the POWMI flag lies in its constant reminder of the plight of American POWs and MIAs from all wars, including those now ongoing. These Americans did not come home from the field of battle, but as the flag's motto states, they are gone but not forgotten. Dying for our freedom isn't the worst that can happen. Being forgotten is. I'm providing you with statistics regarding the over 83,000 U.S. military personnel who are currently missing in action, including 98 from Oregon. These are from World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, Cold War, Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom, and Enduring Freedom. Currently, there's no known prisoners of war. Also included are the numbers and letters of support from each Oregon veterans group supporting this bill. Look at these numbers. There are some figures. Just briefly on some statistics. These statistics were obtained from the Department of Defense for America Missing in Action during World War I. There were no statistics available. World War II, 73,661. The Korean War, 7,906. Vietnam, 1,645. Cold War, 126. Desert Storm, 2. Iraqi Freedom, 1. Enduring Freedom, 1. America has listed 83,342 missing in action. Oregon, World War II. There were no statistical breakdowns for Oregon or World War II. Korean War, 60. Vietnam, 36. Cold War, 2. We have 98 listed missing in action from Oregon. Following veterans groups support this bill in Oregon, the National League of POWMI Families, Non-Commissioned Officers Association of Oregon, the Marine Corps League in Oregon, United Veterans Groups of Oregon, that's also known as UVGO, Air Force Sergeants Association in Oregon, the American Legion in Oregon, Disabled American Veterans in Oregon, Korean War Veterans Association in Oregon, Military Officers Association in Oregon, Military Order of the Purple Heart in Oregon, Paralyzed Veterans of America in Oregon, Retired Enlisted Men's Association in Oregon, Veterans of Foreign Wars in Oregon, and the Vietnam Veterans in Oregon. This represents 57,645 veterans supporting this bill in Oregon. On behalf of myself and the other veterans supporting this bill, I want to thank you for your time. Is there any question I might be able to answer for you?
We're going to defer to your left first, and then we'll take questions.
My name's Gary Charles Lowe. I'm the VFW commander of District 7, which encompasses the Rogue Valley. I'm former Navy. 50 years ago today, how many people remember where they were? I remember. I was off the coast of Vietnam. 18 years old. One of my schoolmates. We called him Billy. His name was William Harry M. Spatcher, Jr. He was killed June the 2nd, 1965. Pardon me if I get a little emotional. Billy was killed the day that my nieces, twin nieces, were celebrating their 8th birthday. We went to school together. He was a classmate of my brother's. He was the same age as my brother. He and my brother knew each other pretty well. They were both on the swim team, Canoga High, California. We called ourselves the Canoga Park Hunters, was the name of the school. We were all proud of that school, and we joined the Navy. My brother joined the Navy. I joined 3 years later. We both served aboard the USS Midway together for 6 months, and he got out in December of 1964. March of 1965, I sailed for Vietnam. Billy M. Spatcher, we'll call him Billy for short, flew with a AWACS crew. AWACS is an anti-submarine warfare airplane. And there was a pilot of an A-4 that was shot down. An A-4 is another fighter aircraft off of an aircraft carrier, USS Midway, the ship that we were on. Anyway, the story goes, on June the 2nd, 1965, an A EA-1F electronic surveillance aircraft launched from the USS Midway in support of a search and rescue mission over North Vietnam. The crew of the SPAD was Lieutenant M.D. McMahon, pilot, Lieutenant J.G. Gerald Romano, navigator, ATR William Anspatcher, Billy, electronics countermeasure operator, and ATN-3 Thomas Plants. While circling the scene of an A-4 pilot's ejection just offshore, the EA-1F was hit by enemy fire and was observed to crash and burn on the nearby coast. One crew member bailed out while the EA-1F was still offshore, but his parachute did not open, and he fell into the sea. According to an intelligence report, a week later, the body drifted ashore. The crew was listed as killed in action, body not recovered. It was assumed three crewmen died in the crash and the fourth was an unsuccessful bailout attempt. On 13 July 1988, nine sets of human remains were repatriated. Among them were the remains of Lieutenant J.G. McMahon, Lieutenant J.G. Romano, and ATR-3 Amspatcher. Almost 3 years later, on April 29, 1991, Petty Officer Plant's remains were identified as one of two sets of remains repatriated on 6 March 1991, 25 years after the EA-1F was shot down. Its crew had come home. Now, I'm supporting this bill about this flag to remind people about the people that we still have missing. When I moved to Oregon in 1987, I met a family up here that had 10 kids of the family. Two of them had served in the United States Army, both of them as helicopter door gunners. The oldest one, David Christensen, he and I became real good friends. His younger brother, Eugene, decided that he needed to go and take David's place in Vietnam. David had gotten married right after he got out of boot camp. 17 days later, he was shipped to Vietnam. He was shot down, got a head wound, got another bird, went back into action. His brother found out about it, went down, talked to the Army. I don't know how they arranged it, but he got to take David's place. He took all the training that David had. The Army let him take David's place. They met each other in Vietnam, one going in, one coming home. Eugene was just 19 years old. He was on a mission, and it wasn't a firefight. He wasn't going to battle. They were going to a rescue mission. They were bringing food and water to some Montagard tribesmen. And I'll go ahead and I'll read about this. It says, February 6, 1969, a UH-1 Huey, even gives a serial number, of the 282nd Assault Helicopter Company was conducting a resupply mission in Quang Trang Province, South Vietnam. Aboard the aircraft, it listed all the people, including my friend, brother, Eugene F. Christensen. About 1,100 hours while en route from a landing zone to another landing zone, they contacted the radio operator and stated that due to poor weather conditions and poor visibility, the flight was returning to the original takeoff area. At that time, the radio operator could hear the helicopter northeast of his location. It sounded as if the aircraft was heading in a northerly direction. When the aircraft failed to return, a coordinated search and rescue operation was initiated and continued for 7 consecutive days, finding nothing. The 7 men were classified as missing in action. As time passed, presumptive findings of death were approved for the 6 Americans, Christensen on 30 October 1978. In the mid-1990s, the aircraft wreckage was located and the site excavated. Human remains found during the site search were repatriated on 27 August 1996. Tentative identification of the 6 Americans were completed on October-December 2000 time frame. with final identification and release of the remains to their respective families in June of 2002. Now, the reason why I believe that it is important to fly the POWMI flag is to remind people that we still have missing. We still might have POWs. And until we bring them all home, I'd like that flag flying to remind everybody in this state that we still have people missing. And if it wasn't for our government and the MIA POW project, these people that have missing wouldn't have closure. They really wouldn't. So anything you can do to make this bill move on and pass, I would appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No, seeing none, thank you, gentlemen, for your service. Thank you for testifying. We have two representatives here, if they want to be kind enough to come up.
I'll be back. I know I got to stay.
I'm just going to be curious to see who gets to go first. Oh, he is.
His first night.
For the record, Sal Escobar, Representative District 6. I don't think there's much we can say more than what has been said here thus far. I do want to relate a little story, though. We're doing a Vietnam replica wall in Medford, Oregon, Central Point, Oregon. And it's an 80% permanent wall, a replica of what we have in Washington, D.C. And I was talking to an individual that said he'd like to buy a brick at $100 for his brother. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. I didn't know you had a brother. And he said, yeah. He said his first mission, he was an Air Force pilot, and he was shot down by a SAM missile over Laos. His first mission. And that was in 1970, and they found his remains just right short of 2,000. But they never gave up. And that's what we can't do. These people have given it all. So therefore, we must remain loyal to them as much as they were loyal to us. This bill, as you see, is a bill that if you have the facilities or the infrastructure, you can put the flag up. If you build new, you're to build the infrastructure in with it. But you're not required to go out and buy infrastructure in order to accommodate this on all public buildings. I didn't know it, but we're supposed to fly that flag 6 times a year. And I think we've been a little remiss with that. I didn't know we were even supposed to do that, but we are. So, anyway, without further ado, I'll turn it over to my fellow representative here, my colleague, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Honorable committee members, thank you for hearing this bill. I'll be very brief, too. I appreciate the good representative from Medford asking me to be a co-chief sponsor. Also, all the work he does on behalf of veterans and this committee does on behalf of veterans, I appreciate it very much. My brother-in-law served on the Joint Personnel Recovery Agency as a polygraph expert, went into the refugee camps in Thailand to see if they were telling the truth, that they saw people, Americans, or what they thought were Americans. Good bill, simple bill, and hope the committee will approve it. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
By the way, I might add, Representative Wisnett, myself, and I believe Senator Bates are the only 3 members of our legislative group that had served in Vietnam in country. Were you in country?
Korea.
Korea, yeah.
All right.
But she flew us there. Bless her heart.
I was a volunteer.
It was so wonderful having them fly us in and out of country.
Madam Vice Chair, questions?
This is technical. There are a lot of public buildings in the state, and I would love to see a flag on every one of them. But I'd like to know how much does a flag cost and who would be paying for the flag?
Well, it would be we're probably talking under, I think it's around $65 or something like that.
For a flag.
And what I would hope that people would do when they adopt this, and like I said, if you have the infrastructure, fine. If you don't go out and buy infrastructure to put up another flagpole for this. But you can clip it on below the American flag or the state flag as well. You just have to buy the clip-ons. But it does bring it lower, but still you can accommodate that. But any new construction should have three flagpoles, one for the U.S. flag, State of Oregon, and the POW-MIA flag. That's what our intent is.
And follow up. Who makes the flags? How can, I mean, where
do
they
get these? There's several. Senator Anderson, I think there's several vendors that do that. At least I know there is for the Oregon flag, so I would assume POW-MIA flag would be somewhere.
Well, there's a dozen places on Amazon.
Yeah.
And DAS has flags, too.
Because I know I bought Oregon flag for our Heroes Memorial in Gresham, and I had my staff do it and had no idea where they got it. I think through the...
You can get it through here for about $65.
Yeah, I think that's what
Mr. Chair, also the National League of Families of POW and MIA have a website, and they sell the flags in those stores, too.
And Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, as I was saying, the DAS, Department of Administrative Services, because the state and federal law require the flag to fly on certain occasions, has a number of flags for public buildings already in its possession for that purpose. So,
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that we're in public buildings are well aware that we're supposed to be flying that flag six times a year, but we are. And example, that means schools. That means post office. That means any public building. So, but I don't think we're really, I don't think it's not well known, I guess I'm saying.
What days are those?
See, 4th of July, Veterans Day.
Mr. Chair.
Memorial Day.
Members of the committee, the day specified by law currently displayed by all public bodies on Armed Forces Day, Memorial Day, Flag Day, Independence Day, National POW-MIA Recognition Day, and Veterans Day, of course.
And the staff.
When is National POW-MIA Recognition Day? We should know that.
That's why I said we're not.
But the government never follows its own rules. That's the problem. That's the whole reason we have the bill. If they just put it up once, then they won't have to worry about it now. That's the point of the bill, right, gentlemen?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Once you get it up, you won't have to worry about it.
They don't have to worry about changing it.
Other questions?
Got to find that out.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for bringing the bill forward to us. I think we do have, I'm looking here, Mike Sullivan has also signed up if he wants to come up and give testimony to this bill. Is there anybody else that wants to join Mr. Sullivan that feels left out of the testimony? Please, go ahead.
September 8th.
September 18th is POW Day.
Chair Boquist and committee members, for the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. And before Senator Mons Anderson says that, I want to announce this is Welcome Back Vietnam Day that the Governor Brown has put in, probably 40 years too late, but it is done. I believe this bill is very important, and I want to thank Representative Esquivel, who's always great on veteran bills. I have a sticker on my truck. I have a flag that's kind of frayed now, POW-MIA, but I kind of like it that way. The problem today is the advertisement of war is not on national TV or newspaper. And I think this visual aid will help people. We should all remember those that fought for this country and died. They truly are the heroes of our country. Thank you very much.
Senator Boquist and committee members, my name is James Klug. I'm the National Historian for the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and I've been in that position now exceeding 5 years. On a regular basis, I have the privilege and honor and the humility to go to Hickam Airfield in Hawaii to JPAC headquarters, where the repatriation of the remains of veterans are brought and identified. And if there's any place more hallowed in this United States other than the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, those individuals that have been brought back, those remains of those service members, it's truly a humbling experience to be there. Nearly 233 years ago, this nation recognized by our first commander-in-chief, General George Washington, that this nation's youth will look to us and recognize the significance of sacrifice by how we treat those that have served. No less could we treat those that have served and never returned. and are still missing, or POWs. Ernie Brace, one of our departed POWs that served nearly 8 years in the Hanoi Hilton out of Klamath Falls. Ernie and I would sit together at times, and it was far too infrequent, but at times, probably at least once a year at POW MIA Day over in White City VA source facility, we would talk about that happened to him while being held POW at the Hanoi Hilton. And I have to share with you, no more horrifying experience, even exceeding that of death, would be that of being POW'd by the enemy. And so I request that you would consider this with your heart open and recognize that this is an act that would bring recognition to all branches of military, regardless. You're not singling out any single branch, but all veterans that have served that have been POW'd and or MIA would be recognized through this effort in a general gesture. And certainly this nation could do no higher than to hold those that have, in truth, paid the ultimate sacrifice for protecting this nation's heritage of freedom for all. And I thank you for this opportunity. I thank you for your efforts in hearing all that you do for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions, members of the committee? Thank you for your service. Appreciate the testimony. This will be rolled forward to next week. Colleagues, before I close out the public hearing on 2892, interesting point of history was brought to my attention in regards to the Spirit of 45-day yes. program that's going on. Yeah. Exactly 70 years ago, in the last day, Second Lieutenant James Thayer, commanding a reconnaissance platoon in Austria, his platoon stumbled across the Gurkenschen prisoner of war camp that had been abandoned by the Nazis and liberated 15,000. And that was 70 years ago today. Thank you very much. With that, colleagues, we'll close the public hearing on 2892, and we're done for the day.
If you could. Everything comes back.